Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Whether it's a midweek game on the continent or a big weekend clash, cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match of up to $100. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 long seasons of exile in the National League. Dedicated staff and passionate supporters celebrate the city's return to glory, the big time, all while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in that higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One's promised land? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row Studios in the crap part of Bedford and the crap part of the South Fork of Long Island, Roger, it's the Men in Blazers podcast.
We back, like England's sense of self.
Aww.
What I was just that said, noise? Well, I'm trying to read what that "aw" meant exactly. You like? Aww. Were you remembering the Empire? Were you remembering yesterday?
Well, no, you were being sweet about England, and I know you're going to use your first person plural a lot. I know it's going to be a lot of we's and lots of us's. Yesterday on Spotify Green Room, we were building statues. I love it. And if you do hear a noise in the background, that is, it's either a bee or a fly. I can't see it, but I can hear the buzz. But I don't have time to deal with that before we go, Roger. I apologize for the bee in the background.
By the way, just so you know, when you sensed a joy in my voice. I realized in sports isn't about winning to me. We've discussed that enough for me not to have to unpack that comment. But it is about being aware that sports, the great human theatre, can make you feel things. Yeah. And I realise I'm pro-happiness, Dave-O, and seeing so many happy people, my family amongst them across England.
Yeah.
I'm just happy for them. I'm not anti-happiness. Come on, happiness.
Well, at certain points in your life, you've been anti-happiness. But you're deeper than that, Rog. There is something about this English team, and we'll get to it later, which means a little bit more to you. And it represents a new kind of Englishness and a new kind of Englishness in these young men that we can start to feel quite good about. We'll unpack that later.
What David is trying to say is I'm just hooked hopelessly. Oh, in love with the Jordan Pickford redemption story. This has been, in case you haven't noticed, one of the biggest weeks in English football history. 55 years of English misery caused by the German national team. Salved, kind of salved. Oh, three lions on their shirts, right off the top. News breaking, which obviously in the joy of the moment is kind of like a tiny little bit of turd just floating down from the stratosphere and landing in my beer, David.
Yes, Rog, breaking news. Literally just minutes before we started this pod, Everton Football Club announced that their new manager, Rog, is going to be Rafa Benitez. Holy crap, how are you feeling?
I'm going to open my beer, which I've got primed for a toast. I'm going to open it right now. That is my bud opening because I need it, Davo. I'm going to say, oh, it's a bit of a weird one. You know how on April the 1st, like every media outlet tries to do a really, most often 99% of the time, completely unfunny April Fool's joke.
Yeah.
Watching the Welcome Our New Gaffer video that Everton released was, I was like, okay, we're in June. What?
June 30th.
What is this? Are you just testing material for next April the 1st? I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. It's a fairly astonishing decision.
So why do you think they've made it? Why? Give me the pros. first of all, before we go into the cons, what are the pros, Rog?
They like beards. Men with little, well, we need a beard. And there's that line in Shakespeare that just came to me. Let me have men about me that are fat. Oh, maybe they were like, just I need to just like a nice, rotund, jolly looking gentleman who looks a bit like the fat controller from Thomas the Tank Engine. They'd be really, that's what we need to lead this team to the next stage.
Okay, look, let me do the pros. He's the most experienced, most successful manager available to take the job.
In all seriousness, the pros, you look at that resume, I think the job that really leaps out, yes, he's won things. Lots of managers have won things. I think the job, honestly, if we're being candid, Newcastle Football Club, he did, well, a phenomenal job, completely against the odds, with a mediocre team, not just a mediocre squad, but a club that was absolutely clown car, and he brought a sense of strategy, a sense of vision, a sense of tactics, and a sense of football. And I think that's probably, if you want a pro, I mean, by the way, a pro, I want to be completely clear, Everton fans, I was asked to give an answer to the pro. That would be the pro. And by the way, I spent some time with him up there in Newcastle, and I could only admire watching him go about his work, how he did it. Those conditions that he worked in at Newcastle were as diabolical as a Premier League football club could be in terms of just the dysfunctional boardroom, the ownership, this one not talking to that one not talking to this one, orders coming in from down south. Just, it was chaos. And, you know, he's super shrewd. I will say, he's extremely politically savvy. The thing that really struck me was that reporters who interviewed him, he'd always do like 15 minutes on the record and then 30 minutes off the record. And those 30 minutes were as frank and as honest and as fascinating as managerial words can be. And what I realized was what he was doing there, it was him creating political currency, that if he was fired tomorrow, then he'd have reporters know his side of the story. He always wanted the reporters to be able to say, but other people say Rafa Benitez was handcuffed in the transfer market. Other people say that he wasn't backed for the players he really wanted. Other people say that the winger who arrived was not on his top 100 list of players. He was always constantly protecting him, but in those conversations you really did get to understand. I learned so much about the challenges of being a manager, particularly up north. I mean, one of the things he used to talk about was how hard it was to persuade players from Italy, from Spain, to move anywhere in England other than London or Manchester. You have to almost pay a premium to them to move up north. And he kept talking about the agony. You had to pay the biggest fortune to get players to bring their wives and family to Newcastle. And there's so much detail that he can provide. And so as a club builder, yes, he definitely fits that list. But Davo, why him? Why him? Because I've got to say, for listeners who have been following the Premier League since 2014, it's more than just a Liverpool connection. I want to make this clear. Rafa Benitez, yes, was Liverpool manager, but he was a Liverpool manager who in 2007, after a derby that was 0-0, that really scuppered his ambitions for the Liverpool season, he took to the post-match press conference and branded Everton Football Club a small club, with a small mentality, a brickbat that then, and I think he knew it when he said it, then got amplified to every Toffee fan with any red friends or family for decades. My brother and I just sent that small club. I mean, it's probably in his top two or three WhatsApp comments still to this day. And yes, nowadays Benitez is older. He's more gregarious. Back then, though, he was a right prick, a complete prick, the fat Spanish waiter, as United and Everton fans always called him. When he said that, Davo, that was a thing that didn't just make Everton fans seethe. It put huge distance between Liverpool fans and Everton fans. It was also dropped at a time when the friendly derby, as a Merseyside derby was called, really turned into a derby with a little more edge, a little more elbow, a little more argy-bargy. And it's all linked to Rafa. And so now he's ours.
Well, I can't remember, but he said something bad about Chelsea also when he was Liverpool manager, and then ended up at Chelsea. And he was never really forgiven by the Chelsea faithful. And even though he won things at Chelsea, you know, certainly the Shed End never really warmed to him. I get that. I get it. Look, I do think that some of it, Rog, has to do with, you know, Carlo Ancelotti worked for Everton. He worked at the football club. And, you know, when you go down the list of experienced managers who've won things, if you want to replace Carlo, you know, who are you going to next? Pellegrini? I don't know. I don't know where you go.
There are other managers. The question I'm asking myself is why? Why would you do this? Why would you do this? You know, other managers are available. I mean, there's a list of managers who fit that sweet spot of professional, strategic, tactical, man-motivating, squad-building human beings who are still quasi-elite. You know, Mancini, Antonio Conte. This is not a situ, Davo, where, I buy your argument, you know, if humanity had been devastated by an awful apocalypse and Rafa Benitez was the last living man on Earth, and so the question is, God, oh, I guess we've got to procreate with him to bring the species back to life. That I understand, but he's not the last living human being breathing, Davo. The future of civilization does not depend on him.
I'm not saying it does, but I also don't think Antonio Conte is taking the Everton job.
But it seems unnecessary, Davo. It seems high risk. It seems a real risk for the owners. If this goes badly from the off, this fan base, Davo, this fan base, just play that out for me. It's fairly, who have dreamt and have aspired, where the taste of Carlo, like Carlo ditched us. That is painful. And I understand there's a panic. We didn't see this coming. We've got to fill it somehow. Oh my God. And we end up with this gentleman amidst the chaos. But if it doesn't go well, Davo, that fissure that it can create between our owners and that fan base, some of whom have already left banners outside of Rafa's home, a man who has a partner, has children, has a family. That was not the Everton way at all. But if it goes badly, how do you see that going?
Look, I think that it's actually easier for a chairman of a club to appoint a manager once it's gone badly in the middle of a season, in some ways, than it is when they've got all the time in the world before a season, when fans have unrealistic expectations and they just want a big name that is really excites them. After it's gone badly, after a few games, you know, you can start to look down the list and find the really right person to fix the situation in your club. Think about how Roy Hodgson came into Crystal Palace. There's no way that Steve could have appointed him over that summer before he bought in, you know, FDB. FDB was the name that made the fans excited. And then once FDB was horrible, then he could bring in Roy Hodgson. And so maybe, Rog, you can bring in Roy Hodgson after it doesn't work with Rafa. Maybe it's going to be a younger manager can come in and has permission to go and do that. I think that, you know, look, clubs will move on. Everton will survive the Rafa Benitez era as long as it lasts. And he might do a very good job.
Yeah, I say winning changes everything. Win a few, and that is a different story. I will say, Roy Hodgson, also a Liverpool manager, but in my mind, my favourite Liverpool manager of all time. Or was that the Brodge? I always find it hard to choose between the two. I don't understand, by the way, why Everton launched Rafa's tenure with a serious video. Oh, new manager! And just a video of his face smiling around Goodison. It was, when I watched it, as an Everton fan, it, like, genuinely, if Everton had created a video with, instead of Rafa, it had like Anton Chigga from No Country for Old Men in the videos, just be like, hello, friendo, with a cattle prod. It had that same kind of emotional reaction. And I'm like, Everton, in the comms team, own it. Own the dislocation, the emotional dissonance, as we are all just reeling, being like, really? Like Spurs did. When Matt Doherty signed for them from Wolves, a man who self-professed Arsenal fan as a kid and had hundreds of tweets, say, as a kid, be like, I love Arsenal forever and ever, and I hate Spurs. And they taped it brilliant. I mean, they got millions of impressions. Most welcome Matt Doherty videos do not get 9 million impressions. but Matt Doherty deleting all of his childhood Arsenal tweets with a kiddie panic smiley face Man, own it, own it, own it. You know what I keep telling myself, Davo, to try and get through this?
What, Rog?
I keep telling myself, and I'm veering into your territory here with this, I keep telling myself, please, 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 let this be Severus Snape, circa Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
Oh, I see. But that's what it's so he was just pretending to be a Death Eater, but in fact, he's one of the good guys.
You think he's working for Voldemort all that time?
Yeah.
But then it turns out he's been following Dumbledore's instructions all along. That's what I'm hoping. That's the best outcome, when he's like, oh, after all this time? Oh, said Dumbledore seriously. And Snape says, always.
Benitez does look like a wizard of sorts. He has some wizarding qualities.
We should acknowledge Spurs. Oh, look like they are the last man standing in the fight to be left with Nuno, who I actually think is a great guy with Poch level team building skills. And news out of Palace, who you mentioned, David.
Yep.
Their next manager.
Yep.
Is reported to be great friend of the pod.
Yeah.
Mr. Patrick Vieira.
One of our favourite guests ever. I like it as a hire for those boys in South London, the academy. I think they really needed a manager who was going to attract more young players to that team and inspire the entire setup all the way down from the kids, the boys and girls, down at that amazing new training ground down in Beckenham, all the way up. I think Patrick Vieira is an inspired choice. I think he can do a really good job down there.
We loved him when he did a live show with us. And he wore enough aftershave for all three of us. He's a lovely, lovely bloke whose managerial rise was long touted until he crapped out last December at Ligue 1's Nice. And there is no doubt he is a leader of men. It's going to be fascinating to see his managerial acumen and how it holds up in the unforgiving bright light to the Premier League.
We should say, before we get into Euro 2020, played in Euro 2021, we've absolutely loved covering the tournament on Spotify Green Room. Rog, I've been in some good green rooms in my time, but Spotify Green Room has become my favourite. The pod we're recording right now is only for regular pod radios, the Men in Blazers pod radio. Put in your pre-order for Crimble. But download the Spotify Green Room app. Join us Friday and Saturday after the day's action for the quarterfinals. It's a whole new platform for us, Rog, and it's different content than we've ever produced anywhere else.
Spotify Green Room, it's like one community drunk dial. I couldn't love this platform more. Come be with us, dear GFOPs. It's magically uplifting, whatever the scores are at the end of the day's games.
Talking of things we love, Rog, Site Credits and the proud presenter of this podcast, DraftKings Sportsbook. This week, DraftKings Sportsbook is putting you courtside with a chance to turn $1 into $100 in Site Credits. That's right. Pick any basketball team that's still in contention. Bet $1. And if that team wins, you win $100.
$100?
In Site Credits. Even better than $100. Who wants anything else? Don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook also offers great odds and promotions on baseball, hockey, and so much more all week long. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code MIB when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits. Bet on the basketball team of your choice to win their next game, and if they do, you will claim $100 in site credits. That's promo code MIB for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Wager paid out in site credits. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Can we get a toast? Kelly,
oh, I want to raise my first bud of the day to you, GFOPs, for your incredible support yesterday, the day in which my book came out into the world, reborn in the USA. It was one of the most meaningful days of my professional life. And not only because Gail King talked about my tiny child spigot penis on CBS morning television. But because I got to talk about what it feels like to have experienced a US naturalization ceremony in a Manhattan courtroom alongside 162 individuals from 47 countries and gain a true appreciation of how the American idea is so deeply felt, David. When you say the oath of allegiance with individuals who survived wars, famine, refugee struggle, you understand the sense of courage, wonder, and possibility that the American idea can and does provide. The past 17 months have been ones of unprecedented chaos and challenge, so I wrote this book with the spirit of love, hope, optimism, I believe will prevail. You know, every book has an epigraph, and it's a weird part of the writing process where you use someone else's words to set the tone for all you write that follows. I use some lines whose emotional wonder and poetic genius I could never, ever follow. And they're perhaps the most important in my book. It's Langston Hughes. Oh, let America be America again, the land that never has been yet and yet must be. I do hope you'll consider getting a copy of my book and then give it 5 stars and write a review on Amazon, which is so bloody important. Please take a minute to do that. I'm really, really, really grateful. And to all of you who've sent me photos of you with the book cover arriving, your support, and Davo, your support, oh my God, it means everything. And I raise this Bud Fam Blood Fam to you with love, with thanks, truly humbled, courage.
I'm very proud of you, Rog. Very proud of what you achieved. You know, probably just a couple of hands worth of people, your family, your loved ones, the other people who work on Men in Blazers know how hard you work. You literally write and research and watch constantly, as well as being such an amazing father and amazing husband and dealing with everything else in your life. You're not so good at looking after your house and yard, but you do a lot. You really do a lot. And how you found time to not only write a book, but to write such a brilliant book, I will never know. You really are a genius. You are touched by a very, very rare talent. I don't agree with everything you always say or everything you always write, but the thought and the wit and the brains that go into every word that comes out of your mouth, and certainly the words that you commit to paper, is just, you know, is just awe-inspiring. And I'm very proud of you, very proud of what you've achieved, and I just wish you great success with this book.
You're a beautiful man. Can I just say, you know me as someone that, both being English and Jewish, I'm filled with a double sense of self-loathing and all that. I still find it really hard when, like, so last night, and we just released this as a podcast, John Green, an amazing friend, really my hero, my writing hero, joined me in a conversation that we released as a podcast with everybody who's brought the book so far. And like, when people say nice things, I find like I genuinely don't know what to do, don't know where to look, can't stand it. I'm trying hard. My wife's like, just look them in the eye, Rog, and say thank you. So, Davo, I would say that to you, but I can't thank you enough, mate. So I'm just going to instead look awkwardly and sweat a little bit and say, let's talk about the football.
Yeah, and flip me off while you do it. I love it. It's very funny. Sick. Okay, Rog, to the football and a Euro 2020, which is down to just 8 teams, the quarterfinals, and has required suspension of disbelief levels normally reserved for Sharknado or the New York Knicks making the playoffs.
Oh, Davo, the round of 16, of which dreams are made of. I mean, surreal dreams. I think we said on our Spotify green rooms that this was the round of 16, as if written by a screenplay of Christopher Nolan. It was surreal. It was bombastic. It was effervescent. It was insane. And, you know, big picture, we have all emerged from lockdown, hell-bent on making up for lost time and partying. But I don't know anyone who has emerged from lockdown drunker than Euro 2020. It's been insane to watch, David.
Yeah, I mean, often tournament football so cagey, so, you know, a premium put on defense and stopping other teams playing football. And we've seen so little of that. We've seen insane goals, insane own goals, 2 own goals committed by goalkeepers that I have literally never, ever seen before.
We've seen own goals. We've seen missed penalties. We've seen score lines ripped from another era. We have seen bombardments of shots, seesaw score lines, no lead is safe, mega teams melting down, World Cup champions, defending Euro champions, all out. You know, more weird crap than an entire season of Stranger Things. And I think we're all the better for it. You know,
yeah, Rog, we've seen VAR working mostly effectively.
VAR is a force for good. Really, yeah. Christopher Nolan? Are you getting away with that? No one will believe it. I mean, I say two quick things. One of the joys of the tournament is, you said it, tournaments are normally cagey, defensive, stalemates. And I think these players are so fatigued mentally, physically, after these pandemic seasons, which have taken so much out of them. And one of the joys for me, that's why it's been so bonkers, is they are pulling on their national team's jerseys. And I think, you know, you watch it in these huddles before extra time, especially Xhaka just going mad, punching his own teammates, whipping them up into a frenzy. Zinchenko, you know, being a leader in the huddle. And you see that football means something to them again. It's almost as if this is a tournament where they're all so knackered, they're all so exhausted, they're just like, sod it, let's play with adrenaline. We're playing in front of fans again, our nation's watching. It's almost like they have resummoned the kind of joyful football they used to play on schoolyards as kids.
Yeah, and I think we've seen quite a lot of teams. We certainly saw it with England yesterday. We've seen teams and individual players taking the initiative themselves on the pitch.
It has been wonderful to witness, and it was summed up for me beautifully by Luis Enrique, the Spain manager, after his team somehow outlasted Croatia 5-3, and he briefed the press. He said, "As for your headline, I've got one for you. It is, enjoy football."
Let's start looking at the teams that are left, starting with the cleanup from a party 55 years in the making. England coming off that historic 2-0 win over Germany last night, and the team they'll meet in the quarterfinals, Ukraine, who saw off Sweden with a 121st minute winner at Hampden Park. This game going down Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern time in Roma. Rog.
Davo, we watch the game. We have watched the English fans beer-soaked watching the game. We have revelled in the post-game. So let me start with the obvious question. If Gareth Southgate was British Prime Minister, how much better off would Britain be? We'd be Scandinavia, wouldn't we?
Oh, he's so measured, Rog. He's so thoughtful. He thinks through all of his decisions so clearly, and then just never gets overexcited when he's talking to the press. The pressure, you cannot imagine the pressure an England manager is under, Rog. The 24-hour news cycle, everyone just ready, daggers out, ready to just rip him apart. Every decision he makes, questioned by every fan on social media, every single pundit across every single network. It is just unbelievable how he keeps his calm. I tell you, I would vote for the Southgate party.
I mean, it's always hard being the English manager. There's a quote by a Brazilian manager in the 1990s. Why do I have to be manager in a country where there are 250 million people or however many are in Brazil? All of them think they know better than the Brazilian national team manager. That is always the heavy load that the English national team manager must bear. But to do it in this time of Brexit, of division, of political divide, frankly, of chaos. I mean, we cannot imagine what this gentleman is dealing with, how he's processing it, how he's handling it emotionally. I will say, he does the role with such emotional intelligence, with such empathy. Barney Rene in The Guardian this morning had a great line that sums up Southgate. He said, most of the time, he just sounds like the last sensible person left in the country.
Oh my God, it is so true. I mean, I think Guardian writers particularly like him because they suspect that he reads The Guardian.
I feel he's like he's one of us.
I think he's more of an independent reader. Maybe he probably reads a multitude of papers, Roger, and has a balanced opinion after reading everything.
A 2-0 victory that was magnificent, and that we spent a lot of time breaking down last night in our Spotify green room. So we're not going to relive the beats of the game. It was magnificent to witness new Wembley, that frankly antiseptic rendering of the old Wembley, hosted its true first really great memory and beer-soaked occasion that will last for generations in fans' memories. My dominant emotion, Dave, when I woke up this morning was really after the trauma, one trauma after another of facing Germany in big tournaments, and just that hope and dashed hope and Sisyphus emotion of, oh, we did it again, is relief, David. I feel an immense wave of relief for English fans, for my family who are English fans, for the English nation in this time, in this moment. David, what was your dominant emotion when you woke up with a bit of pause, other than with a hangover?
You know, my father never much cared about football, Rog. Didn't like it. Felt it was too noisy, too uncouth. But the only fixture he ever really cared about was England against Germany. And this is because as a young man, when he visited Germany at the end of the war, he could never forgive the Germans for what he saw. And he would have cared mightily about that day. And I know that's not politically correct to say. I know that it's a new Germany. I know that it's a very different country now. But it is, you can't take the history out of sports. And it's not just the football history. There's a lot of other history there that is not forgotten by certainly older members of British society. And I grew up very much in the wake of that. So losses to Germany, victories over Germany, they just have a different weight, a very, very different weight. What was even more dominant, though, for me, and I spoke about this a little on the Green Room yesterday, is I'm very aware that this group of young men, led by this remarkable man, Gareth Southgate, it defines a very different Englishness, a very different Britishness that I'm very positive about and I'm very optimistic about. Multicultural, you know, balanced, inspirational. Just you look at Rashford, you look at Sterling, you look at Harry Kane, you look at Declan Rice, you look at Mason Mount. There are young leaders, young men on this team who are just phenomenal human beings, and they're on the right side of almost every issue as far as I'm concerned. And they're too young to remember any of the history I remember, too young to remember any of the history of previous generations of English players. And they play with a spirit and a heart and a bravery and a clinicality that is just so wonderful to see. And for me, finally, I just love it in any part of life or business or sport when a team takes its greatest weaknesses or an individual takes his or her greatest weaknesses and turns them into strengths. All the questions about England's defense, Harry Maguire's going to be sick. England's defense have been superb. All the questions about Jordan Pickford, his club form this season, it's been a little bit shaky. Jordan Pickford has been magnificent. All the questions about Harry Kane and Raheem Sterling, did they even deserve to be in the side, in the squad? You know, sub out Harry Kane, he's finished, he's done. And they proved it all. They proved all their doubters wrong yesterday. And I love it that they've taken the weaknesses and turned them into strengths. And it was honestly both a performance, a group of people, and a result that we can all be very proud of.
Yeah, and that joy, that pride. I love your point about how this team is a face of a new, optimistic Britain, a force for good. But they're in a battle to be that face of a new Britain as a force for good. And there's no doubt yesterday's win was a win for the good guys off the field. You know, this game, ballads will be written about this for generations. I mean, listeners, just to be candid, this was the football equivalent of the 2004 American League Championship Series. The Red Sox have finally beaten the Yankees. You know, this is a German team that have given us trauma after trauma. They keep reminding us, you think you're a big dog? You're not. You're a little dog that thinks it's a big dog. And we are going to show you how and now. And to rise up and overcome, as a limited team, as you say, both of these teams, to be candid, both of these teams were flawed, both were skill-blessed, both had obvious vulnerabilities, they ground away at each other, it wasn't always pretty. But England were not only playing Germany, they were playing the memory of national traumas past when playing Germany. Mm. And what was fascinating, when chances came, England took theirs, and Germany missed in perhaps the most un-German way of all time. And that was startling. And that's why the nation of England essentially overnight just became Philadelphia post-Super Bowl glory. Greased those light poles with Crisco, Davo. It was magnificent to watch their joy. A nation waking up this morning hungover. But it feels like they're waking up to a different England, David. The fear that's undermined us on the football field has evaporated. The white whale has been caught. The dragon slayed. An albatross set free. A fear which has been replaced by a joy. Can you put into words what it means that we beat Germany? Can you put into words what that means?
Yeah, I mean, and it partly does come from semi-finals in the last World Cup, quarterfinals now in the Euros, beating Germany. You know, we never beat great teams in knockout rounds of major tournaments. It just doesn't happen. Historically great teams, highly ranked teams, and certainly Germany, you know, after their win against Portugal in the group stages, a lot of people were fancying them for the tournament, including myself. So, look, it means so much for so many reasons, and I think those scenes at Wembley were amazing. You know, you posted a bunch of them, the video of those crowds just celebrating, shirts off, just having the time of their lives. It means more to England than any other international fixture. Obviously, for Germany, they'll say no, Holland means more, or France means more, or Italy means more. But certainly for England, that is the big one. That is the biggest game for them to win.
Part of me thinks, wait, is this a trick? Letting us build hope, turning up our joy to 11, only to find a new way to cause us pain, lose to Ukraine, lols. Did you really think you were going to get out of the escape room, England? We can still find a way to hurt you. But here is my question. Does it matter now, Davo, if England do crap out? Beating Germany in a tournament, to some degree, that's enough. Like, everything else now is gravy. England's now, kind of playing with house money.
Yeah, close, but not quite. I think it's okay for them to lose in the semi. I think losing in the quarterfinals to Ukraine will still be seen as a failure. So I think they need to win the next round. But then I think it's house money.
God, I've got to say, what these gentlemen have done is enough for them to be treated like conquering heroes, even without the trophy part of the hero's journey. And the only way England can better the feelings that we witnessed yesterday is to win it all. But how good are they, Dave? How good are they? This is a pragmatic team built around not attempting to obliterate opponents, but to almost to numb them. If we were a UFC fighter, we'd be the dude that doesn't strike that much, but just loves to grapple on the floor, drain our opponent's strength through a strong ground game. It's not pretty. It's not always exclamation point filled, but in tournament play, it can take you places.
Yeah, look, it can be pretty. I think that first goal and the second goal that England scored yesterday were very pretty. But I think you're right. The rest of the time, they're playing defensively very solid football, and they're winning a lot of those little midfield battles that don't get noticed. You know, there is a sense that you know, Southgate hasn't even found his best team yet. Hasn't even found perhaps even his best formation. And I think there's more to come from this England side. I think they're very good. I think they're hard to play against. I was speaking to my friend Julian yesterday, who's a big Belgium fan and, you know, knows a lot about football. And he has been saying since the beginning of the tournament that England are the team that he looks at that give him most nightmares, that cause him most challenges. You know, in every part of the field. And I don't think anybody wants to play them right now.
Yeah, it does thrill me. I've got to say that two of the team's heroes, not Harry Kane, who is the kind of English archetype that's just good at everything, good at football, at cricket, at just getting behind the flight controls of a Spitfire and shooting down some German Stuka bombers, then just jumping out of that cockpit, scoring a casual hat-trick against Arsenal. And then just finishing off the day by hitting a century on the cricket field against Australia. But it's very meaningful to me that the two England heroes so far, one is Raheem Sterling, that lightning rod, that tabloid scapegoat, a man who's lived through racist English tabloid inflamed trial by fire and emerged the other side hardened, more world-wise, probably more world-weary, but still only 26. He seems so much older, but he still has his head held high.
And just watching him celebrate that first goal, that was a huge defining moment as an England player for Raheem Sterling. As good as he's been in the past, as many performances as he's had, as many goals as he's scored in this tournament, that goal against Germany will be the clip that will be shown for the rest of his life. It is the defining moment that will be remembered by every, you know, English schoolboy and schoolgirl and you know, will be played on television God knows how many times. I mean, it's amazing. And you could just see that joy and that realization, that sheer thrill. He was like a little boy after scoring that goal. I've never seen Raz smile like that. It was absolutely wonderful to watch.
And the other? Jordan Pickford.
Magnificent. My God, he's been so good in this tournament. Goalie of the tournament. Has there been a better goalie in the tournament? He's kept a clean sheet. Nobody scored against him. He's made some stunning saves. He's made some great clearances. And he's hit some of those clearances right to the feet of wing-backs and wingers playing way up the field. He's been sensational.
Lil Picky. Got it, lads. Always got a mistake in him. The court jester, rave on. But the reality is, Everton fans know this. He's been fantastic all season. This is not just a, oh, he suddenly got good for England thing. He has actually been fantastic for the entire season. He's been locked down. And in this tournament, no goals in four games. Never been done before in the Euros. His redemption. Hear me roar, Jordan Pickford. Humanly magnificent. And the other star for England? Devo, the fans. The fans. Every shot of shirt off, tummy out, tattered up belly. The flags from Sunderland, South Shield, Grimsby, towns in which, let's just say, hope has been low on the ground. Families, multi-generational often. You know, this is the joy they've been waiting. They've been longing in lockdown, Devo. They've been aching. And to see them just elated in this moment, making memories together, it's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, you've said many times, I don't know that it's your opinion, but you've repeated it, that old idea that England is a southern club. And I think you look at the banners, you look at the fans, and you know that there are fans from all over the country, all four corners of the country, supporting this team, and a team who come from all four corners of the country. Yeah, they've been amazing. The fans have been amazing.
Oh, Gareth Southgate said something beautiful post-game. He said, to know you've given millions and millions of people happiness like that after the year they've had, that's what's special. And when I watch these England fans, I'm actually reminded of something John Green said last night on our event. He said, the importance of football is it allows all fans, but particularly male fans who are taught to repress many emotions inside, it gives them an opportunity to just let it out. And watching this nation let it out, let it really out, shirts off, beer spilt down bad stomachs, it's so bloody therapeutic and healing. We're going to talk about the football to come. I do want to note, though, Germany, Davo, Ersatz Germany, they weren't a great team, were they?
Yeah, but we've seen Germany go through these regeneration phases a few times. And I think this is a little bit of a regeneration phase. You know, I think Toni Kroos is announcing his retirement today. I'm not sure we'll see Thomas Müller in a major tournament again. Manuel Neuer also coming to the end of his era. And of course, Yogi Löw stepping off into his booger-munching paradise, Rog. It's a... But Germany will always earth, you know, more young players. You know, Gnabry came on late. He looks like he's going to be amazing. So they'll be great again. You know, I'm not worried for Germany in the future of their football.
I mean, you made a point yesterday that Group F, which was such a talking point going into the tournament, Portugal, France, Germany, the deathiest group of death that ever deathed, and now they're all dead. Germany, though, as you say, being Germany, like any movie bad guy, will slink off and regenerate. They will be back stronger than ever, more hell-bent on English destruction, and probably with a manager who can do more than just jam his fingers up different orifices, even deeper, the more his team are in a hole. Thanks also for the tweets about how you look forward, GFOPs, to Jurgen Klopp being US men's national team manager in 2023. Lols. Now, who looms, Davo? Ukraine in Rome. A Ukraine who had to go an extra 30 minutes to fend off 10 men Sweden. They will be without striker Artem Beseden, who was kneecapped by red-carded Marcus Danielsson. Mm. First game for England on the road in the whole tournament, with authorities urging English fans not to travel to Italy for COVID reasons. I'm sure some still will. But they've a life on the road, a whole new wrinkle for this England squad. How much of a factor do you think it could be, essentially, our first away game?
Yeah, I mean, I think so many of these English kids are now so used to playing, you know, on the continent, as we referred to it growing up. I think they'll be fine. That won't be an excuse. It won't be as good as playing in front of a full match of fans. I think there will be a couple of thousand, 3,000 English fans there. It will be like an away European night. I think this team have the experience to handle that. It's a good surface in Rome.
It should be said, this Ukraine team, they look gassed, absolutely gassed by the final whistle at the end of extra time. Players just going down left and right. Yarmolenko leaving the pitch hobbling. But this will be one of the biggest games in their entire history. There will be severe underdogs. They're a team that have tactically under Shevchenko evolved game to game. So a little bit of an unknown. But I'd be surprised if they try to do more than sit compact, hold on, and try and nick something through a moment of quality through Zinchenko, David.
Yeah, and he certainly has quality, the Man City winger. And the point you made yesterday, he plays with a command and a swagger for Ukraine that he doesn't always get to show on the, you know, all-star team that is Manchester City. And he's been their player of the tournament and one of the players of the tournament, Rog.
Finally, huge respect to all the staff at every English beer garden. They're the true unsung heroes of this tournament. You know, the further England goes, tougher their job becomes. I can't think of a harder task than to pour a beer, knowing full well that within moments it's going to be thrown up into the air and filled again. There was just an incredible piece in The Athletic this morning entitled something like Liquid Limbs and Living, with a quote from an English fan: "We've got one more of these nights in us, maybe two, maybe three. Truth is, we have a year of them inside, yearning for freedom." A reminder, if we needed one, that football, only football can make humanity soar like this and can truly make us feel alive.
You know, they often say that nachos are just a, you know, salsa delivery system. I think to some extent, football for English fans is just a beer delivery system. It just exists for them to just drink more beer. Okay, now a matchup, Rog, between two teams who've been the class of the tournament thus far, that talent-soaked but injury-ridden Belgium side, who are coming off a 1-0 win over Portugal, take on an Italia, that went all Azzurri buzzsaw through the group stage, only to be forced into extra time by Austria. This one going down Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern time at the Allianz Arena in Munich.
Two teams who looked death in the eye in the last round and said to death, not today. Against that tenacious Austria side, Italy were rocked. They suffered, but they dug deep. They persevered. They found a way through substitute Chiesa. That goal of his, three moves, each drawing confidence from the last, the nervy fight to control the ball, a brilliant flick to ice the defender. We doing this. And then pulling his foot back to just missile it into the net. You are mine, you bastards. That whole team, they'll be stronger for this experience, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's good. A bit of adversity. It's not all going to be easy. And I think this game against Belgium is going to test them severely. I think previous games versus Belgium and Italy, you'd have expected an Italy side to try to prevent Belgium from playing football. But I don't think it's going to be that kind of a game. I think that it's going to be very open, a lot of attacking, and this one could have a lot of goals in it.
You know, I think for Italy, whether they hand the midfield start to Verratti, ostensibly the squad star, or Locatelli, with whom they look more effective and balanced, that's a big decision. And whether Chiesa has earned that start with his big-time goal. You know, we said in the run-up to this one, how would Italy deal with adversity? We saw that. Now what remains to be seen is how they'll deal with a top team. We're going to learn that on Friday, because Belgium won the battle against the Portuguese, but they may have lost the war in the process. That was a hand-to-hand knife fight, that game. I mean, an attritional game against a shithousing Portugal who outshot them, outpossessed them, won every metric apart from the final score. And they experienced true pain, the Belgians. Lost Kevin De Bruyne, lost Eden Hazard, at least to the semi-finals or the putative semi-finals. It was really, really heartbreaking to witness, David. KDB going down in another match. Again, I think 14 injuries since 2017. Oh, you really feel for him. And there's no replacing Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, no, it's tough. And I think that, you know, these potential injuries looming large over the fixture is why Italy are, you know, pretty decent favourites now in the game. I hope KDB can play. I really hope he can. I think Eden Hazard also looked very good at the end of that last game. Started to look like he was approaching back to some real form.
You know, KDB, it's not just his play. It's a bit like losing a great QB. The whole team will miss, you know, Lukaku fed off his creative long balls. The reinforcement effect of his absence is dire. And not to mention, this team, this Belgian team, have been on the road the entire tournament, which is another grinding intangible that can undo you on your very own. Very much advantage Italia. That team will be stronger for surviving their near-death experience, which for a deeply religious man like Mancini will feel like some kind of miracle. He will feel that. He'll be telling his team, we are all mortal. We're all deeply mortal. Oh, we are fallible, but worry not. God is on our side. I think they think, Davo, football's coming a casa.
Huh. Can't wait to see what he and his coaching staff are wearing. Okay, the winner of Belgium versus Italy will take on one of the teams that slow-rolled their way through the opening two games, only to absorb life force and build momentum along the way. Spain, coming off that 5-3 victory over Croatia, they're taking on a Switzerland side that vanquished defending world champions France in penalties. This game being played Friday at noon Eastern time in St. Petersburg, Russia.
Oh, first of all, big love to Kylian Mbappe, young global icon who self-destructed in the crucible of penalties, put out a heartbreaking statement on Twitter. He said, finding sleep will be difficult. Oh, but unfortunately, these are the risks of the sport I love so much. It was really heartbreaking to see a player linked constantly to Liverpool by Liverpool fans in their dreams. Oh, he's never looked more Everton. And this Spanish team, they seem like, I mean, just a psychological head case for Luis Enrique, a team gripped by neuroses for him to try and diffuse in treatment style. I mean, they are not what they are in glory days past. Real Madrid and Barcelona also no longer true alphas in the Champions League. They're all worried that the game, which has given the nation so much identity validation, is not truly theirs anymore to dominate. Yet, they managed to outwit, to outlast a super game Croatia, who were magnificent, tiny nation, population size of Oklahoma, who are just always willing to look European superpowers in the eye and go for it. What do you see when you look at this Spanish team, who, in the words of the great late Jim Valvano, survived and advanced?
Yeah, well, they're starting to score for fun, Rog. Their last group stage game, their last 16 game, they have twice as many goals as England have in the entire tournament. So I think more than twice as many goals. So I feel like they could still click. I still think they're very dangerous. I still think they've got lots of very good players. And I think Enrique's a very good manager. So let's see what happens. I think they've got this. I think they can certainly have the talent to beat Switzerland. And then you make it into a semi-final and anything can happen.
I've got to be honest, that Unai Simon swing from own goal goat to save after save superhero, to me, that alone gives a team belief, a sense of in-game redemption. But they face a Switzerland who similarly know, after defanging France, they can outlast all comers. Xhaka, man, to give him his full name, the much maligned Xhaka, to watch him stand in the centre of his teammates as they circle around him, coke in hand, shouting, punching, urging, loving, and they are all willing to follow him through the doors of hell. This is a team who've suffered and know they can make any team suffer. This is going to be an incredible game, Davo, between a team who will play vertical football and a Swiss club who will charge forward through their human cube, Shaqiri. I know that if Jordan's hair can grow back like it has, anything is possible.
Finally, two of the feel-good stories of the tournament. A Denmark who has ridden a slipstream of team spirit after Christian Eriksen's medical emergency and remarkable recovery, remarkable, miraculous, beautiful recovery in the first match. They'll face a resolute Czech Republic side that cancelled Frank de Boer and the Netherlands in the round of 16. This one goes down noon Eastern time Saturday in where, Rog? Baku, Azerbaijan. It's the best John since Stones.
Oh, the Czechs are living, breathing reminders that knockout football makes a fool out of all of us. They drop the Dutch with a punch that they never saw coming. They are clinical. Oh, they are organised, deservedly so, a fearsome collective. To me, the West Ham of Euro 2020, deeply organised, relentless, truly, truly a unit. And this match against Denmark is going to pitch two of the most deeply committed, passionate teams left in this tournament against each other. And it's going to be magnificent.
The Czech Republic, who play a version of football that I really enjoy. You know, wingers and a big centre forward. Very strong defence, crunching tackling in midfield. You know, against the Denmark side that you just cannot help but admire. Don't always love the way that Scandinavian teams play football. But Denmark in this tournament, not just because of the way they rallied around, you know, each other in the wake of the Christian Eriksen, you know, tragedy, which, you know, turned into a miracle, a beautiful miracle. But just the way they've played football, they've played really exciting, attacking football where everyone has contributed. And they're a very, very, very difficult team to count out at this point.
Oh, I adore Denmark. What an incredible human arc that squad have lived in the last 2 weeks. When you have survived the worst thing that life can throw at you, everything must feel possible. But it's not just a non-footballing way. When you watch them play, this is not a team anyone would want to face, riding a wave of emotion, but also insanely tactically flexible. They played three formations in the first 65 minutes alone, and they made the changes seamlessly on the fly. They are so well drilled, so aware of their jobs, very much a team of destiny. And if that wasn't enough, Davo, just think about the prospect of Kasper Dolberg sitting up sleeplessly, flicking his light on and off, fuming about that $85,000 watch.
Yeah, exactly.
That suffering, that trauma, the redemption it cries out for, that is what's going to turn this game.
A quick reminder, we're going to be back on Spotify Green Room immediately after all of these games on Friday and Saturday at 5:15 p.m. Eastern Time. And you, Rog, are back tomorrow with a special Thursday edition of WGFOP. Call in your questions at 646-450-9472.
WGFOP, the podcasting equivalent of a telethon benefiting balls.
Okay, Rog, my favourite part of the pod. In these times of non-stop tournament football, Roger's calendar has entered its own knockout stage with all of its competing appointments. Fortunately for him, he's got the American football fan's best friend to help him make it through that tricky schedule, Google Assistant.
I'm in full-on Euro mode, Davo. I'm overcome with the fervour only an international tournament can inspire in me. But in the process, I've lost my grip on when the games kick off, where they're being played, or even what day it is. Hey, Google, when do England play Ukraine?
On Saturday, England will play Ukraine at Stadio Olimpico at 3 p.m.
Oh, the Stadio Olimpico in Rome. That's amore. The quarterfinals go down Friday and Saturday. And after that, even you will be able to predict this one, Rog. The semi-finals begin. Those take place Tuesday and Wednesday of next week.
First the quarterfinals, then the semi-finals. Don't tell me what's next, Davo. I don't want any spoilers.
Okay, Rog, can we get one final toast with that exclamation point in a bottle, Jägermeister, to bring us home?
Before I give a toast, I want to do a pre-toast to the US women's national team as they embark on their Olympic tune-up tour, play Mexico once Thursday and again on Monday before they head off to Tokyo to try and become the first team since Mussolini's Italy. Did he coach them to win the World Cup and the Olympics back-to-back? Godspeed to all of them. And now I want to raise this shot of Jägermeister, this bottle of human emotion in a shot glass, Davo, to Gareth Southgate. I found it incredibly touching, post-game, the moment when he was asked by a journalist to reflect upon the symmetry of his career as a player. You may remember Gareth Southgate missed a penalty in a Euro 96 semi-final shootout loss to Germany, which was a human agony, a true devastating, traumatic moment for him, not just as a player, but as a human being. And yesterday, as manager, he led England to its first tournament win against the German rivals since 1966. And his answer, in which he talked about never being able to move on, nor ever being able to make up his miss to his teammates from 1996, are proof that you can never forget or exercise painful memories, but you can make new and beautiful ones and become deeper and more understanding as a human being along the way. You can doubt Gareth Southgate's tactics all you want, Davo, but I will say, in terms of his empathy and his emotional intelligence, Gareth Southgate is elite.
Absolutely a great leader of young men. Vendapunk Rog.
War pig!
Was that a Rabona?
I like snacks.
Balds win, Balds win.
Take that, Gloria.
Balds lose.
To Tweed.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. Love you, Davo.
Love you, Rog.
Davo loves you, England.
So do you, Rog. We and us used multiple times during this pod.
Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.